Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to bring in the professor, John Clayton. Hi, John.
Hello.
How are you?
Hanging in there.
Text in 710-710. Any questions that you have for the professor? It's your only chance today. Give him a listen. What's going on, John? Why not? Hey, it's a great day. I'm happy. Happy holidays.
Oh, it is adventure and challenges each day. So you just try to get through them.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that. And we're happy to have you here. All right, John, we were talking about Trey Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of these that, I don't know why, he seems to be the guy that everybody wants to pick on this year. And he's eligible to come back right now as far as, you know, his health goes and everything. What did you think about what you heard from Pete? You know, I always say, hey, look, when it comes to evaluating a defensive back, I'll take Pete's word for it. If he's happy, I'm happy. But, you know, DJ Reed playing really well right now as well. Bump and I were just talking about, like, what do you do?
You stay with DJ Reed.
I agree.
I mean, the combination right now is working out better. I mean, I know Flowers, you know, struggled a little bit early in the season, then, you know, came on, then, of course, got the injury. But you look at DJ Reed since he's been in there. I mean, with maybe the exception of one quarter, I think he's done exceptionally well. So, yeah, I think you just stay
with
John,
him. Sorry, John. What's the deal with Snacks? Do you think his pride was hurt when they decided to start Monet, or do you think he's done playing football? What's your feel on that situation?
Well, I think that you can understand that because, I mean, here's a guy who was willing to come in, stay on the practice squad until they thought he was ready and he got himself in shape, and then he goes on the active roster, and then the next thing you know, they take Brian Monet and put him up and they put Snacks down. And if that's the case, and you know, he's had opportunities to go to other places when he was on the practice squad and he elected to stay here because he liked it here. But I think you can understand, it's like, okay, I mean, he's been around this league long enough as a starter and a longtime player that it's like, hey, if you're taking Brian Monet and making him active, I can see where I fit in on this team. I know you like me, but I mean, he's still under his rookie contract, so he's going to be here next year, and obviously Snacks Harrison isn't. But then the problem that Snacks put up for himself, you know, he gets himself cut on a Tuesday, and now the only thing that he has is waiting to see if there's another playoff team that might be willing to sign him, because, you know, 18 teams are not going to have games after this Sunday, and so, you know, there's going to be a limited market for him. But you can understand, it's like, you know what, if that's the case, you know, it's like it's one game, I'll just accept the fact that, you know, you want to go with the younger guy, and I'll move on.
Did you think also, John, that it had to do with how they felt about Brian Monet? I mean, they seemed to really like him, and boy, I broke down today the football 101. He was getting off on the ball down on the goal line, and that goal line stand, he did a really good job, and yeah, part of it has to do with that, and as you mentioned, he's a little cheaper.
Oh, yeah. It's not a matter of cheaper. It's just, okay, here's a player that if you put Snacks up, then you might have to lose Monet. And so if that's going to be the case, now, again, he was going to be on injured reserve. So it's like, okay, you can have him indefinitely. But I think what it comes down to is that, I mean, you realize, you know, he still has a future for this team past this year. And so because he's still on his rookie contract. And so because of that, you just take the tack that it's like, okay, you know, you're not talking a starter. You're talking, you know, the third or fourth defensive tackle. And he's done well enough to be able to stay. But it's kind of tough because, again, you know, a guy like a Snacks Harrison is, I think, a really good player. And I thought he did some good things. And then particularly they got lucky late in the game because, you know, Jaron Reed, you know, I don't know what injury he suffered, but, you know, he was kneeling on the ground. I mean, he was pointing a little bit to his knee. I don't know if he got something in his eye. And you're thinking, uh-oh, is this kind of like the injury that happened at right tackle to Brandon Shell, where in the final few minutes of the game, he suffers an injury that's going to keep him out for several weeks. But the fortunate thing for Reed, he not only came back, but he came back and got a sack.
John, I'm going to take you over to the AFC. The Dolphins have been the surprise team of the league this year, one of them at least. And the relationship between Tua and Fitz, are you surprised that they're able to get along and kind of understand each other's roles down there?
Yeah, I think, I mean, because initially, you know, when they made the decision to bench Fitz, I mean, he kind of complained. I mean, again, I thought he was going to take it well, and then the comments that he made, you can see he was a little bit bitter about it, but he put him behind him. And I think that now the fact that you can see that Brian Flores has worked it out so that if he sees Tua struggle, he's going to put Fitz in there. And I think that that makes the relationship even better. You know, I still remember talking to Greg Roman about this, you know, when he was in San Francisco during their Super Bowl year. And what ends up happening is that, you know, you have Colin Kaepernick, who is, you know, doing well. But what made things work so much better was that Alex Smith was there. And what Greg says is that, you know, if you have a good quarterback room, it's so important because, you know, like in the case of Alex, I mean, he taught Colin a lot of things, just like he taught Patrick Mahomes so many things in Kansas City, you know, how to be a professional, when to get to the stadium, when to get to the practices, what to do here, how you prepare, all those different things. And so I think, you know, with, you know, Fitz, it's one where, I mean, I know he's not going to get a beard out of Tua, but at least you can see that you good guidance really can help. And I think that made the relationship very good because I think, you know, Fitz, he's been around long enough that he realizes what this guy's good and he is the future and he is the present.
All right, John, the 323, not sure where that is, wants to know who you think.
That's Cali, baby.
Oh, it's down in California. Okay, who do you think? Well, it says Jeff in Salem, so he's from California. He moved to Salem, Oregon, and now he wants to know who's the most underrated player. He thinks it's Puna. What do you think, John?
I could agree with that, yeah. I mean, you know, unless you want to put DJ Reed in there, but, yeah Puna gets pressure. He stops the run. I mean, this is now one of the best run-stopping teams in football, if not the best. And so I think that he probably doesn't get enough credit for how well he does.
John, the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick situation, I think it's unfair to say that Tom Brady was the reason for success in New England. I think Tom Brady went to Tampa Bay, has a lot surrounding him. How do you fix what's going on in New England? Is it as simple as drafting or getting a franchise quarterback, or do you see a lot more things going on over there?
I just think they're not a good team. And again, so many things worked against them that they lost players in free agency. They had 8 opt-outs after losing players in free agency. You know, they traded a safety. And then, of course, they had nothing at the receiver tight end position, so that was bad on Bill Belichick's part. But I think, you know, the cupboard isn't bare, but it wasn't good.
Hey, John, somebody wanted to know if the Chargers, they've won a few lately. They're on a 3-game winning streak, one of them in overtime against the Raiders, beat Broncos, beat Atlanta. Is that any chance that's going to save Anthony Lynn's job?
It could because, you know, one of the criticisms, which was rightful, was the fact that he did so poorly at the end of games. He was losing so many close games. But now he's come back and he's won 3 close games in a row. And so because of that, of that, you can see that he is edging his way back. I mean, everybody likes him so much and everybody roots for him so much, you know, and if he was going to be sitting there with like back-to-back 5-win seasons, it doesn't look good, but he's finishing the season better. You know, they've got to get better on special teams because that is one of the worst, and some of his decision-making has been bad. You know, remember in the middle of the season, they were blowing 16, 17-point leads like mad at a stretch in a one-month period where they blew 16-point leads 3 times and 17 points. They did come back to win one of those games. But in the end, I think you can see that you know, he's now winning things back, and you hope it allows him to be able to stay. He's got a great young quarterback in Justin Herbert. That's a very talented team. I mean, the record they have isn't indicating how much talent that they have, but now he's starting to get things going in a positive direction.
John, the 206 asked, will Earl Thomas be on the team next season, and how much will he be asking or worth?
Well, I mean, if he asks for a lot, he's not going to be on a team, so he's going to have to adjust. And I don't know, we just saw a deal that was done 3 years, $31 million, you know, by, you know, in New York with a safety. So it's like, I don't know if he can get $10 million, but if he's thinking he's going to get more than $10 million, that's going to be wrong. Logan Ryan, of course, got that 3-year, $31 million extension. But to get that, he had to sign for very little money to get to the Giants, but that worked out so well. But you'd have to think that there's no doubt he's talented enough to get on a roster, but he's going to be hitting an environment where there's not a lot of cap room, and maybe there's not going to be as much interest in him.
You know, I kind of go back and forth on him because we were just talking to Dave Craig, John, and, you know, he was talking about how he thinks the players today still love football.
Yeah.
Remember Earl saying, I'm married to football. He's like, it's everything to me. But, you know, so I see that side of him. But, you know, he also has a lot of pride and doesn't want to play for anything. He thought his contract should have been redone. And, you know, so I don't know, man. I'm kind of torn on how whether or not we see him back in the NFL or not.
I think he loves the game enough that he'll be back. You can understand, like, Eric Reed went through the same thing, you know, the safety who had been in Carolina and a couple of other places. And you watch now what happens if you're like a safety, or even if you're even Snacks Harrison. I mean, you have to lower yourself to take the practice squad and not know when you're going to be on the active roster. But that's, you know, a lot of the ways you have to do it, because they had the five, six-day COVID testing procedure, and you're on the practice squad, and you can do it, but you don't know when you're going to be. And, you know, Reed just refused to do that. And I'm sure that Earl's had opportunities to get on the practice squad, but he wouldn't do it because he wants the money. And, of course, you know, the practice squad's only going to get him $10,000 a week. So, you know, I think that he's got to find a way to get back. But I think he will, because, you know, for example, you don't know if Robert Saleh is going to get a job. I think he probably will. But if you're looking for a safety, you know, he knows Earl enough. That could be an option for him. And there's going to be enough needs for safety to try to at least give him opportunities. So I think he's going to be back on a roster. But again, if he wants a lot of money, then he won't be back on a roster.
Hey, John, Shaquille Griffin's going to want to get paid after this season. How much do you think he's worth? And do you think the Hawks bring him back?
I think so, because, again, I think it's so important to not only take care of your own players, but also take care of your own good players. You know, and he and Chris Carson are the two most important guys to re-sign. And so my guess would be, I think, you know, his value is $12 to $14 million. You know, and I say 14 because that's kind of the transition number. And, of course, what I mean by transition is that, you know, franchise players get in the top five, then, you know, top 10 or so for the transition players. And so in a market that's going to be a little bit tight for money because of the low cap, you know, he may not be able to get the 14. But you go back to last year, you know, Byron Jones got 16.5. Trey Waynes in Cincinnati got 14. James Bradbury got 14. And the problem that Shaquille is going to face is that, you know, he is in a position where, okay, they can franchise him, and the franchise tag may drop all the way down to $12 million, so it comes in at a little bit of a bargain. So I say between 12 and 14, but I think it's very important to take care of him, because you know that they're not going to re-sign Quentin Dunbar. Flowers is still going to be here for another year, and so you still want to have enough depth. And, of course, with Reed still being under into his rookie contract, they're in good shape there. But you know, I think it's important to take care of him. In a lot of ways, it's kind of a two-for-one deal. Because if you have Shaquille Griffin, then you have Shaquem Griffin. And so now you have a linebacker and a corner. And I think that's important.
You know, the Dunbar thing, I'm not so sure, John. But, you know, maybe you're right. I just, that guy was so special. And Pete, listening to him talk about how unusual he was. Yep. But, you know, you've got him, you've got DJ Reed, you've got Trey Flowers, who they have back now. And, you know, so you don't see any way they don't sign Shaquille Griffin here.
Well, I mean, I think they will. I can't guarantee it. Yeah. You know, I can't read John Snyder's mind and you know, think how he's going to work under the salary cap. But I think it's important to get him because, again, you know,
he's playing really well,
and you know, he's been to a Pro Bowl and he can play at a Pro Bowl level. So I think that you want as much as you can to keep this defense together. You know, it kind of blew my mind when I looked at this defense at the beginning of the season, and I thought this was going to be, you know, the best secondary since the Legion of Boom. I know back I saw that Bob Condotta did the same thing, called it the Legion of Zoom. I did that at the beginning of the year, and then everything started to go wrong. Shaquille Griffin struggled. Then, you know, you have Jamal Adams trying to adapt, and, of course, he was getting beaten a lot in coverage. And then he missed four games. Shaquille Griffin missed a couple games with the hamstring injury. DJ Reed was just getting started. There were so many things working against it. Now it starts to look like that secondary that you anticipated, even though that they didn't have Quentin Dunbar.
John, what are your thoughts on the Browns? I mean, they lose to the Jets. They have two losses to the Ravens, one to the Raiders, one to the Steelers. They haven't really beaten anybody. Who's good? Are they a true contender, or do you think this is a product of their schedule?
This is a product of their schedule, but they're also good enough that they can win those winnable games. That's to their credit. You know, but you can see, again, you just have to write off the Jets' loss, because when you lose your top four receivers to COVID testing, then you lose your left tackle to COVID problems, you have two linebackers out, you're totally vulnerable. And so They just didn't have enough guys to be able to win a game. And again, very similar to what we saw with the Denver Broncos when their four quarterbacks end up being scratched because they were in tight contact and didn't have their masks on. So it was understandable. But no, I thought all along, because all the teams in the AFC North all had easy schedules. And part of that was because they were playing the NFC East, and so they got all those wins. And so you're basically going 3-1 and going +2 as far as their record. And of course, if you're Cleveland and you're in the AFC North, you're pretty much going to go 2-0 against the Cincinnati Bengals. So that's the advantage was there. So, I mean, basically they're a 9-win team that's probably going to win 11.
All right, John, I'm going to run this past you. I have a database sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
And I know yours are like on a computer. Mine's on the back of the NFL GSIS page here. Last six opponents, defensive performance for the Seahawks, and first six. So the first six were Atlanta, New England, Dallas, Miami, Minnesota, Arizona. 480 yards they gave up per game, 28.6 points. The last six, they're giving up 287 yards and 13.6 points. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to rush to a conclusion here. Maybe not, but these are much lesser opponents. But they're not that much lesser. The teams that they just played, the last six, 34-55-1. And the teams that they played the first six games are 40-50.
Mm-hmm.
So 40 wins, 50 losses. So it's not like they were playing great teams then as well. It just seems to me it's more about how they're playing together. And I know that's what Pete Carroll is talking about. And that's what Jamal Adams said the other day when he talked about we haven't played our best defense yet. Are you just dismissing that because of the opponents?
Well, I think people didn't give enough credit to the 5-0 start against those teams, because look at the quarterbacks they played. They played Kirk Cousins. They played Dak Prescott when he was leading the league in passing.
Yep.
I mean, Cam Newton actually had a good game. So the first five games were against good quarterbacks, even though they were losing teams. But,
Matt Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick was like the lesser of the group, but he's like on the only winning team in that early start. But, they're playing good quarterbacks. And so naturally, in a year like this, when if you have any kind of issues with no training camp, no offseason program, you're going to be vulnerable. Certainly in this stretch, which is kind of good and bad on two different ends. Yeah, they're getting lesser quarterbacks because they had a stretch where they're playing the young quarterbacks. Even though they were supposed to play Daniel Jones, they got Colt McCoy, but he was just a game manager. And then they get Darnold. They get Haskins. So they were able to go up and play some lesser quarterbacks who were young and maybe not established yet. So that worked to their benefit. But also, what caught them cold was the fact that, in six of the last seven games, they played pretty good defenses that you didn't anticipate. You knew the Rams were going to be good, but you didn't know whether the Giants were for real on defense, and they were. Whether Washington was for real, and they were. You knew the Eagle defense was good. And so a lot of that has taken down the numbers on the offense and makes it look like Russell Wilson's in this bad slump, and the defense is now doing great. Hey, well, the defense is doing great because you saw complete games now against the Jets. You saw a complete game on Sunday and a complete game where they're playing very well. They're getting the sacks. They're stopping the run. They're making the big plays. When they need to make a stop, they're making a stop. So I just think it's a good sign because, in that first part of the season, in those five games against the four of them losing teams and they're playing good quarterbacks, that was not going to be a team that was going to go to the Super Bowl. Too many yards given up, and when they go into playoffs, they're going to play good quarterbacks. Right. Now you can see they can stop good offenses with a good defensive playing if they can continue playing like they have the last several weeks.
Hey, John, do you think DJ Reed will be here for the long haul?
I think so, yeah. I don't see why not. I mean,
they need to put him on kickoff return, John.
Let's put it this way. I think he's more important to the defense. I mean, the defense needs DJ Reed.
Why is he on punt then?
What's that?
Why is he on punt then?
I mean,
still can get blown up on a punt.
Yeah. I think we're being greedy on that one. being greedy. It's like, hey, he's good
greedy
enough, but it's like his value right now to this team is so much more at cornerback, particularly with Trey Flowers out. Now, maybe with Trey back, they can do it, but they're not going to do it this week. I mean, you want to try to rest as much as you can because you're not going to get a bye week. You're going to go straight into the playoffs. And so because of that, it's like you don't want to overdo it.
It saddens me to speculate about next year, because we're in a playoff run here, man. We're getting ready to go to the playoffs, but lots of people have questions about this. John, has Jaron Reed played up to his $11 million contract?
Absolutely.
I think so too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, cause you know,
6.5 sacks now.
Yeah. 6.5 sacks. And you know, and the sacks didn't really start until they were able to get Carlos Dunlap, because you go through and you watched it all last year. Sure, they had a good pass rusher who didn't get sacks in Jadeveon Clowney, but that was it. I mean, you know, I'm just going off memory right now, but when you count the sack total of the guys who were not Clowney coming in, and you certainly keep, particularly the young guys on this team, you know, they only had like about a total of 14 to 15 career sacks. And so here's Clowney coming in, but he only got 3 and they ended up with 28. So not since Frank Clark has been on this team have they had anybody that draws the attention and the extra attention to open things up for him. And so now he, Puna Ford, they can both get pressure on the quarterbacks. And I think at this stage, you know, thanks to the pressure they're getting from the Leo position, you know, he's now back to where he was 2 years ago in that 10.5 sack season.
That's a great point. You know, last year they didn't have anybody with a history of sacks. Like, The best was probably Jaron Reed at 10.5. So, and then, you know, it was Rasheem Green. Now this year they've got Alton Robinson, the 5th-round rookie, has as many as Rasheem Green had last year, who led the team with 4 sacks.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's the thing. It's like need that extra blocker. I mean, they could double-team Clowney as much as possible, but there was nobody else other than maybe Quentin Jefferson that was able to gonna get any pressure on the quarterback. And so that put, you know, more away from the middle of the field that Reed could do. But now he can rush from the middle. And, you know, if he had Benson Mayo, I mean, if he had Carlos Dunlap for the whole season, I bet you would equal that 10.5 sack season.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. All right, John, we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up next, we'll talk to El Hombre, Michael Bradley. That's next on Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus.